It has been a week, a good week, an interesting week. You're listening to KGVM 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio, and I'm Roxana, and this is Desert Oracle Radio Replay. I really wanted to get away from human and electronic noise today, and so I came out to the Highlight Canyon area. And even out here you can probably hear a car in the distance, but I'm standing next to the creek. Flowing water always soothes me when I get in a mood like this. We had visitors this week from Las Vegas. Is my son and his family, and it was wonderful. And the feeling in the house sure changes when a little family with a 10-month-old baby leaves. It's too quiet. But at home, our neighbors have a project going on, so there's some power equipment sounds going on. We were guilty of the same thing earlier this summer. We had some projects going on ourselves. And you know, you want people to be happy and make their place like they like it. So the best thing to do is kind of get away and try to find something a little more quiet. If you've been following the news, you probably heard about the hurricane that moved inland and became a tropical storm and brought a year's worth of rain in one day to Death Valley. And not a small amount of rain to Joshua Tree. The episode we're going to hear tonight was actually produced as that storm was beginning to move in. Ken Lane produced this episode, as always, and it was produced on August 18, 2023, and the title is Hurricane Hillary in the High Desert. Enjoy.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert. If you are listening tonight on your radio anywhere in our southwestern lands, make a reminder to get some extra batteries. Do it tonight if there's a convenience store or truck stop or drugstore or whatever that's still open, but otherwise do it in the morning, because when the power goes out you can't hear what's happening if you don't have batteries in your radio. The cable, the internet, the cell service, the electrical grid, all of these utility services we used to take for granted before they started going out for the various disasters, visible and invisible. They will go out in the days and nights ahead. Not for all of us, maybe not for you, maybe you're a lucky duck, but maybe your relatives across town. It might hit them. Maybe the people watching your dog, the people watching your kids, your parents, your friends, your church group, your bowling league, your Wiccan congregation. Well, this is Desert Oracle Radio for August 18, 2023. We're saying the date, which we usually don't do, because the hurricane is headed right for us. Hurricane Hillary, right here in the California desert. So I'm going to be real specific for our broadcast listeners on KCDZ, Z107.7 FM in the High Desert, Morongo Valley, Yucca Valley and Yucca Mesa, Pipes Canyon and Pioneer Town, Landers and Flamingo Heights and Johnson Valley, Joshua Tree and 29 Palms from the Marine Base boundary down to the National Park, Wonder Valley and the Mojave Wilderness beyond. Because when you look at the big red danger zone in the middle of the Weather Service maps on this evening, you will see that we are in it, right up at the north end of the highest predicted rainfall and flooding zone. Now, maybe that means we don't get it as bad or for as long as our friends from the border zone up through Coachella Valley to Palm Springs and Desert Hot Springs. Maybe it means nothing of the sort. Prepare for a lot of rain. Prepare for a lot of water in a lot of places we don't often see it. And up in the high desert, prepare to hang around for a while. You may not be able to get down the hill right away. I've seen the work crews all last night and today checking our big storm channels and storm drains and where the big sandy washes cross all our major roads and our two state highways up here, the 62 and the 247, 29 Palms Highway and Old Woman Springs Road. Plan on those roads washing out. Maybe not right by your place, but probably between you and somewhere you expect to get to this weekend or Monday, whether it's Walmart or the hospital or the liquor store or, oh, the first day of school. That's supposed to be Monday. As usual, the school district doesn't know what it's going to do. They'll tell you maybe about midnight Sunday when all the power's out and the cell phones don't work. We know about the wind up here. If your place stood through the last dozen windstorms, it's probably not gonna blow over this time, but if there is anything you've lost after a typical desert windstorm, a trampoline, your garbage bins, the satellite dish, your horse, etc., you might want to spend your early Saturday securing that stuff as best you can, won't you? Put the trash bins in the shed or the garage. Anything that's flapping around generally, try to secure it. Charge all your devices, your phones, your iPads, your Kindles, charge your rechargeable batteries, whatever you got. And keep everything charged up all the way. And get out your candles and your tea lights and your flashlights while you've still got daylight, while the lights are still on. Check them all now. When you've still got time to get to the store in the morning and replace the flashlight itself, get new batteries, etc. If you're sick of hearing this because the radio and the internet won't shut up about the hurricane, well, too bad. This has never happened before. Make it easier. Not just on yourself, make it easier on the people around you so maybe you don't have to be rescued from your upside down Subaru. Make it easier on your neighbors a half mile down the road. They don't really want to find your recycling bin dumped all over their 2.5 acres. If you are visiting, if you're already here, get some supplies at the supermarket and stay where you are and stay out of sight and don't make trouble, you know? Well, this is a stupid time of year to be hiking or camping or coming here at all, honestly. It's monsoon season. It's very hot. It's very muggy. It's very unpleasant. This is a time of year when people die regardless of hurricanes, which usually aren't the issue. Trails are going to wash out in this rain. Unpaved roads are going to wash out. Paved roads are going to wash out. The national park is going to close the gates. Who knows when, but they're going to close them. If you get stuck or you get hurt, count on even less ways to get help than usual. And the usual is there's really no help. Flash flooding is something that people honestly cannot comprehend until it happens. Watching it on TikTok don't count. When it does happen, people are often in the wrong place. Even when it's happening, it doesn't quite add up. You see this seemingly slow-moving sludge and it doesn't look like much, and then... oh, what is that sticking out of the mud there? Is that the top of a car? Is that a hand? Get yourself situated is what I mean, because by tomorrow night, you want to not be worried. You want to have your food, your beer, your prescriptions for yourself or the dog or whoever needs them. Candles and flashlights at the ready. Plenty of stuff to eat that doesn't require electricity.
Scientists are saying the future is going to be far more futuristic than they originally predicted.
I have enough water to get through a few days. These storms can affect your water supply, water quality, water pressure. They might wash out your water pipes from the well or from your water district. We don't know. This has not happened before. Not in the 150 years we've been keeping track around here, anyway. The closest thing we know of is the 1939 hurricane that broke up over Long Beach and killed a whole lot of people. Sandbags are a very good idea. San Bernardino County fire stations in the high desert are supposed to have free sandbags, Joshua Tree, 29, etc. There's a limit per household, 10 bags from the fire station. This is factual as of Friday afternoon. I picked up some extra sandbags at my local fire station next to my local bar. And I love that sort of scene. It's when you feel like you live somewhere with some humanity, you know? The Public Works building in Yucca Valley has sandbags too, just off Yucca Trail in Indio, but I don't know if they're open Saturday. Look at the mountains around you. Remember where that water comes down when it really comes down up here. See where your neighbors are putting their sandbags. Your neighbors who actually live here, I mean, they will probably know what to do if they've been here a while. It has been a weird week already. If my voice sounds rougher than usual, well, the COVID finally got me. Glad to be over the hump. Glad to be in the radio studio in the night with you. Night is the time of the prowler. It's the kingdom of shadows. I'd been sick for several days, and I finally had the energy to go for a short walk in the hills, and a half hour later, I was thinking, let's go back to bed. So I drive back to the house, and as I'm coming down the road, in the headlights, I see this figure hunched against my front door, trying to fade into the shadows. It's a prowler trying my door. So I jump out and I chase him off the property and down the road, and he heads off into the darkness and the Joshua trees. I usually shut the gate on the road going in, but I was still sort of lightheaded, like I am now, and I left it open. It wasn't even all the way dark yet when I returned. Not dark yet, but getting there real fast, and I was in no condition for a desert chase in the 90 degree dusk. So I just let him go, and I called my neighbors on that side of the road and told them to lock up, turn the lights on, wake up the dogs, be ready, etc. The usual prowler, dark clothes, dark backpack, dark ball cap pulled down low. And then I locked up my own gate and I took a walk around the place to make sure an accomplice wasn't hiding out back. And that's when I noticed this big old spiny desert lizard. This big old spiny desert lizard who shares the patio with me was apparently dead. It was slumped on the fence rail, its face pushed up against the fence post. Legs and lizard fingers and tail dangling lifelessly. I prodded it. No movement. So I left it alone because some kinds of lizards can play dead for a few minutes because some predators will leave them alone that way. Like the Roadrunner. The Roadrunner doesn't just want to eat, the Roadrunner wants to kill. That's the whole point. That's the fun part. You ever watch a Roadrunner hunting? Its head is like a jackhammer. Your eyes can barely follow that beak braining a ground squirrel on a rock. An hour or two later, I was outside again, and the poor lizard was still right there. Nobody lives forever, you know? It had always been comfortable around me. It had never run off or anything unless I surprised it, not once in the several years I've known it. I'd watch it feed on the bugs hanging around the porch light globe on summer nights. They'll be half alive, banging between the hot bulb and the lantern glass, wings already frying off. Deciding maybe now it's time to get away from the light. Time to get out of the sauna. So this was a very big lizard, very well fed. A spiny desert lizard, the kind you always see on the Joshua trees, just beautiful with that red and gold sparkling armor. Because I had exactly enough remaining brain function to use Twitter, I posted about how I'd chased this prowler off the property and how the prowler had disappeared into the desert across the road. And then I mentioned the dead lizard as an ominous aside. People by the hundreds were thrilled and engaged by the dead lizard part, anyway. I had to turn off replies because of the great waves of emotion triggered by the apparently dead lizard. It occurred to me that I could have admitted killing the prowler and dumping his body in the desert, and it would have gone unnoticed. people's brains work in strange ways in our time. Words don't mean much. I mean, they don't really hold any meaning most of the time. There's this therapy talk people will do saying, "I hear you," as a kind of psychic protection spell. And it really means, "I've tuned out completely, carry on." And we all sort of do that today because we're overwhelmed. Anyway, the next day, the dead lizard was gone. I'd planned on respectfully throwing it over the fence so the ants would not make a big mess of it right there, but it had apparently resurrected. Praise be to God, the lizard had come back to life after something like 8 hours slumped dead on a fence rail. I know how long it was because the COVID has wrecked my sleep pattern even more than usual, and I was up after 3 a.m. drinking tea with lemon and honey and a little whiskey. And I don't know what to make of it. Last night it was back on the rails, slumped all dead-like, but this time I just grinned. Because if that big old lizard feels comfortable enough to sleep right next to me while I'm outside reading and having my cowboy hot toddy, it just made me feel warm inside. Because of the cowboy hot toddy on the warm night. And the COVID and the fever, of course. But it's more than all that. This morning, the lizard was doing the usual. It was looking good. It was prowling around on the walls, on the patio. My friend Matthew Adams in Las Vegas had said about the lizard's strange new sleeping arrangement, "Nobody likes this humidity." And I thought maybe that's it. Maybe the lizard knows about Hurricane Hillary, God help us all, and its usual bed tucked into the brush and the dead vegetation on the ground, that's all going to flood. This lizard is a sort of Noah. So I need to protect this lizard at all costs. I can turn over the data to the National Weather Service, or start my own farmer's almanac, or get it to pick lottery numbers or something. Life-threatening rainfall and flooding, that's what you want to keep in mind. That's straight from the National Weather Service. The low deserts may receive up to 10 inches of rain. Of course, this is going to vary widely. But the point is, you do not know how it's going to vary until it happens. Don't drive across water, please. It's not worth it. Don't get in the wash to check it out. Not worth it. We may get a year or three's worth of rain between Saturday night and Tuesday morning in the low desert and in the high desert. Effects will be widespread over much of the desert and mountain southwest, but right here around Joshua Tree National Park, we'll see some of the highest rainfall, along with very strong and crazily shifting winds, flooding, lightning, etc. No tropical storm has made landfall in California in 84 years. And only 3 times in recorded history. It's real, so don't be foolish about it, because barely anybody alive today has ever lived through a real hurricane busting up over the California desert. well. Some people say you should not do your radio show when you're sick in the head. But I am not one of those people. There are no guest hosts on Desert Oracle. Don Rickles and Joan Rivers are not available. Jay Leno caught on fire and has a night off. Larry Sanders never even existed. Soundscapes on this program by Red, Blue, Black, Silver. Choose a hill country for storms. There, all the business of the weather is carried on above your horizon and loses its terror. The disastrous storms are on the levels, sea or sand or plains. There, you only get a hint of what is about to happen. The fume of the gods rising from their meeting place under the rim of the world. And when it breaks upon you, there is no stay nor shelter. You are lapped in them like uprooted grass. But the storms of hill countries have other business. They have habits to be learned. Mary Hunter Austin, Land of Little Rain. As Isaacs and across the great Mojave wilderness, you have been listening to Desert Oracle Radio. I'm your host, Ken Lane. Keep your radio tuned to 107.7 FM in the high desert. If you're looking for information about what's going on, because that's going to be your only connection to the world should the internet and the cell service go out. I grew up in the hurricane zone, New Orleans, Louisiana, and when it all goes down, you very much need to tune into your local news broadcast. I was born in a crossfire hurricane. That's what Keith Richards wrote for the first line of Jumpin' Jack Flash, a poetic reference to the Nazis' bombing of London when he was born in December of 1943. Well, I was born in the Hurricane Betsy aftermath of 1965, when the city was still flooded, the stores empty, the power out. My dad had a fishing skiff he took out to gather supplies. Just going down the aisles of the Schwegman supermarket, the Piggly Wiggly, grabbing anything that wasn't ruined. My mother was 9 months pregnant up on the roof fighting off water moccasins with a broom. All night long, we'd keep the TV and the radio on listening to the updates. Was this the one? Was this the hurricane that would come right up the Mississippi and wipe us all out? Well, here we are in the Mojave Desert, and this is the one. This is the hurricane that's headed right for us. Be careful, friends, and once you're prepared and it's time to hunker down, enjoy the excitement. Nobody ever says that on the weather report, but it's exciting. It's real life. It's right here. No Netflix necessary, no waterhead versions of reality required. Thank you for listening, and good night from the Voice of the Desert.
So I don't know if a hurricane tropical storm is ever going to actually reach us here in Montana, but we did see some of the rains that came in from that system that hit the desert. Here, flooding is a very common thing that can happen. It can knock out roads, take down power lines. Wildfires are another thing up here we need to be aware of. And let's not forget earthquakes. We do live in a geothermal area. And all this makes me think of emergency plans. Do you have one? Gallatin County has a local emergency notification system. You can sign up for that to keep up on the information. According to the Red Cross, wildfires can move at a rate of up to 14 miles an hour. We're also known to get some interesting weather in the winter that can shut things down. How do you prepare at home? We have a well out at our house, but if the power gets knocked out, then that pump is not going to work. We were told when we moved in to keep bottles of water handy, you know, gallon jugs handy, and there's lots of other systems you can do to make sure you don't run out of water should you get shut down for 3 days or so. You can buy a 3-day emergency preparedness kit from the Red Cross, or you can learn how to make your own. And then there's the E word, evacuation. If you're going to have to leave in a hurry, it's good to have a kit put together. A go bag is what some people call it. Red Cross suggests 3 days' supply of water and non-perishable foods, a first aid kit and prescription medicines, a cell phone if you have one, and the companion charger, a flashlight, radio, and extra batteries, copies of important documents and emergency plans, essential pet supplies, weather-appropriate clothing, and you can learn more by going to ready.gov, and they should have a file there about building a kit. Red Cross also suggests that you create and print an evacuation plan so that all the members of your family and your neighbors are all on the same page. Did you know that the annual raptor count at the lookout of Bridger Bowl starts today, August 27th? Here's the founder, Steve Hoffman, to say a little about it.
And so this is where May and Anna and Alex are going to be hanging out this fall. That's the view to the north from the lookout. And it's quite an exciting place to be, especially when they're really flying. And that's a sharpshooting hawk passing close by. We use actually owl decoys to bring the birds in close for closer viewing, because they The great horned owl is the number one enemy of most birds of prey, diurnal birds of prey. While the hawks are sleeping, the owls are hunting, and they can, if they find a nest or a roosting bird, they can kill it and eat it. So the big attraction for the bridgers is the golden eagle. Over half of all the birds we count each fall are golden eagles. And we've seen as many as 1,870 in one season. We've counted as many as 560 in one day. That was in 1999, I believe. Numbers have declined, however. And of course, the birds are using updrafts. That's why they're attracted to the bridgers. The birds are looking for ways to fly south without flapping their wings the whole time. And they can do that two ways. Along ridgetop, there's what's called orographic lift or slope soaring, and they fly along the top of the ridge and they don't have to flap their wings. Or thermal soaring, the sun heats up the ground or the trees or rocks, creates this rising column of air, and they find those rising columns and migrate to the next rising thermal, and they again minimize the flapping because they don't know when or where they're going to get their next meal. Now, the bridger's flyway was discovered by a guy named a friend of mine, Fred Tilley, back in the 80s. He told me about it, and that's I went up there and decided to start a count there and a few years later. And Fred's actually from New Jersey, and he used to count hawks on the Kittatinny Ridge just northeast of Hawk Mountain. And he lives in Arleigh, Montana. And he met his wife, Kathy, up on the Ghost Chutes, which is the largest known flyway for birds of prey in the interior of Western North America, which I discovered in 1979 and started banding in 1980. And he used to help me count the birds up there in the Ghost Chutes.
And here is Steve talking about those golden eagles.
And we're going to start with, of course, the bridger's number one species, the golden eagle. So, most of you probably know that the word golden comes from the golden nape on the back of the neck of a golden eagle. So it's, here we go, right here. And it really flashes very light colors at a distance in bright sunlight. And I've seen people actually call them bald eagles when the sun is brightly shining on a very light colored golden eagle nape, because it makes the whole head almost look white. It looks very brightly light colored compared to the rest of the body. And so it can be confused with a bald eagle just for that reason. So one of the things we'll talk about is how to tell the two apart other than white head or not. So the adult golden is a chocolate brown bird all over. The only light part of the bird, really, is the golden nape and these yellow feet. You might also notice the bird has feathers all the way to the toes. These are feathers on the lower leg. And most raptors don't have that, actually, but a few do. But one of the most striking things about golden eagles is they have a very, very small head in relationship to the size of the body. In relationship to the length of the tail, the head sticks out only a little ways compared to the large eagle, a large head of the bald eagle. And golden eagles like to nest on cliffs, and they often go back to the same nest and build more and more, put more and more sticks on it. And this nest has been used obviously for decades, and this thing is already about, I think it's like 8 or 12 feet tall or something. And of course, there's the two white chicks. They usually only lay one or two eggs and raise one or two chicks. And this nest had a very interesting prey on it. Anybody know what that is? Anybody?
Western kingbird?
That's it, Western kingbird. Now that's not much of a meal for an eagle, is it? But I think they must have found it, a bird that was injured or just flopping around and you know, I mean, raptors are, they're opportunists, and if they find something that is easy, they might just pick it up and take it to the nest, you know, especially if their chicks are hungry. But that's a very unusual prey on them, I'll tell you. tell you that. And juvenile golden eagles have often a little white on top of the wings and white at the base of the tail. And they also have a lot of white underneath the wings out towards the outer part. And this is a small amount of white. And there are occasionally there are golden eagles out of the nest that don't have any white in the wings, but always have white in the tail. Well, they can have varying amounts of white in the wing. But if you see white in the wing, the bird's probably not more than a year and a half years old. And the white in the tail can last for 3 to 4 years before it becomes a completely chocolate brown bird. So you can see in this bird, there's a lot more white under the wing. But you also might notice that there's a little molt going on here. There's a couple of feathers that are coming in. See how it's a little shorter than the other ones? So it's just starting to molt. So that bird is actually in its second spring. First spring, it just hatched. So it's about a year old, but it's in its second calendar year. So when I say second year, I'm talking about which calendar year it's in. How many calendar years has it lived on Earth? This is the second year bird, but it's actually only about 1 year old. It's just starting its first molt. All the other secondaries, all the primaries, all the tail feathers are all exactly the same length. They look all identical. And so the bird is just beginning to molt its first feathers, which usually starts in the springtime and ends in the late summer or early fall. So most of the birds that we see migrating over the bridges may be just finishing their molt, or they may be completely done. And eagles actually don't molt all their tail feathers and all their wing feathers every year. They molt about a third to a half of those feathers each year. So it takes 2 to 3 years for them to completely replace all their tail and wing feathers. Whereas most hawks replace all their tail and wing feathers every year. Again, through the spring and summer and into the fall, into the early fall. And we were looking at some birds up on the gravelies yesterday that were really looking pretty ratty. And they were in the middle of molting. This is the time of year they're molting. And so some birds are in the middle of new feathers growing in, old feathers popping out. And they have to replace their feathers regularly because they get worn out flying through the shrubs and bushes trying to catch prey. Their feathers don't live, they last forever. They need to replace them every year, or in the case of eagles, every 2 to 3 years. So one difference between golden eagle and a bald eagle is how it holds its wings when it's gliding or soaring. In the case of a gliding, which is flying in a straight direction without flapping, the golden eagle is pretty flat with a little upswept wing tip. The bald eagle is actually slightly bowed, somewhat like a gull, with the wings pointing at the tip of the wings pointing downward a little bit. And goldens, when they're just circling in a thermal, they usually show some dihedral. When I say dihedral, I'm talking about wings above the horizontal. And so that's something to look for to distinguish bald from golden. You may know you have an eagle, but you can tell right away if it's a golden or a bald just how it holds its wings. And unfortunately, one of the most significant findings of the Brizard Project since the early 90s is we have detected a highly statistical decline in the numbers of golden eagles at the count site. So back in 1991, 92, 93, 94, we were seeing 600 golden eagles per 100 hours. That's what these numbers are. This is the raptors per 100 hours. So 600 goldens per 100 hours. Now, what we're getting is more like 300, 350. Last fall was down to like 120. So that when I say 35 to 40% decline in golden eagles, that might be even conservative. So actually, by 2000, a lot of the decline that had occurred. We're down to about 350, and up here we're around 600 or even 650 here in 1992. So, you know, it seems like most of the decline occurred that 2000 to 2010 period in here. And then it stabilized quite a bit, but now we're starting to see further decline in the last few years. And we wonder if that might be partly due to the smoke. It makes it more difficult for the birds to get lift. It makes us more difficult for us to see birds through the dense smoke. And so that could be part of the problem. And we've been getting more and more smoke. Good question?
Is it a decreased number of birds, or are they going somewhere else?
Well, there is a guy north of us that's putting satellite radios on some of the birds. And so right now we don't have enough data to say that they're going somewhere else, but it's possible that their flyways could be changing somewhat due to weather changes, climate changes, smoke impacts and affecting their updrafts. Last fall, we also had a lot of very calm days. So wildfire smoke would just hang around and there'd be no wind to give them that good grizz lift. And so that may have probably made it difficult for us to count the birds, because a lot of them may not have gotten up to the ridge top. They may have gone by halfway up the ridge or even down at the base of the mountain through the valley. But this is an alarming statistic right here, this thing. And we can explain this decline. About 80% of this decline, we have an R-squared value of 0.792, which means about 80% of this graph can be explained by this particular formula. That's called a regression analysis. And we do that every year and compare the results. But the most statistically significant trend we've seen in any of the 17 species is the golden eagle. And of course, golden eagles, their prime habitat is sage steppe, sagebrush country, sage and native grasses, which used to occupy like well over half of the West. And a lot of the sage has been eliminated. It's been chained, it's been poisoned, it's been cleared, and they planted exotic grasses from Russia for the cows to eat. They've also planted crops. And sage is some of the most important, it's one of the most important plants in the entire West to sustain wildlife. For example, mule deer eat a lot of sage in the winter. Pronghorn eat a lot of sage in the winter. And of course, sage grouse eat nothing but sagebrush in the winter. And so if you run out of sage, all those species will be adversely affected. And eagles, of course, really like their favorite prey is actually the jackrabbit. And jackrabbits love sage as well. They live in the sage country. And so as the sagebrush declines, I think another problem is the eagles are running out of jackrabbits. So that's, I think, one factor. And there's, of course, more and more oil and gas development in the West, more and more suburban and urban development in the West. And the birds may not be surviving the winters. Even, a lot of these birds are coming from the far north. They're coming from Alaska, northern Canada, and they're wintering in Montana, Colorado, New Mexico, and northern Mexico. But they may not be making it back up next spring if they can't find enough food anymore.
I want to especially thank Sacagawea Audubon for sponsoring the Bridger Mountain Raptor Count Project and for bringing in Steve Hoffman to do classes on raptor identification. I'll have more about raptors from Steve in upcoming shows. Here's a heads up. Raptor Fest at Bridger Bowl is October 7th and 8th this year. It's an amazing event for all ages. Go to BridgerRaptorFest.com for more information. And you can learn more about the Raptor Count Project at the SacagaweaAudubon.org website. Thanks for listening today. I'd love to hear about your bird sightings or anything on your mind. You can call and leave me a message at 406-404-6246. And remember to spread the word that you can hear this program on the air at 95.9 FM Bozeman Community Radio, or you can stream it online at kgvm.org at 7 p.m. Sunday and 9 a.m. Monday. Our past Desert Oracle radio replay episodes are also available on demand on the KGVM.org website. Well, that's it for today. So till next time, listeners, be safe, stay well, and sweet dreams. Garth Stevenson takes us out today with the title song of his album, Flying.